Well, this is a bit of a different kind of a thing for me to do. I mean, I do speak once in a while, but this particular teaching has taken me about 18 months to prepare. And I have this booklet, and you should have one too. But we made another 30 copies real quick, and guess what? We're out again. But I am going to do a final edition on it. As soon as I can decipher all the notes that I've had, we did it upstairs, made a few mistakes last Sunday. I'll clean that up today, and then we'll republish the book, and it'll be online. So let's talk about the last 18 months in my life and my relationship with the HRV. HRV, Himalayan Region Vineyards. We've been going there for 20 years, and I go back every year now because it's getting more and more intense in a very good way. And if it wouldn't cost me 150,000 points, I'd probably go back twice a year. I just don't have that many points to go on. But it is an absolutely top of the world, so to say, given that it's the Himalayan mountains experience for me. And it's not just looking at mountains. It's looking at what's going on there and what has actually happened. So I want to take you on this little journey that I've been on, and it revolves around the earthquake and what happened in April of 2015 when the major part of the destruction took place. And I'm not going to really talk about any of the relief effort because I wasn't really involved with the relief effort. The relief effort was we received about $500,000 Canadian, which is a lot of money, from around the world, and we sent it over there, and the relief team, the leaders there, looked after everything. They covered off with us what they were going to do. They made all the decisions. It's all on the internet. It's a fantastic story. The information is on the internet, and if you read it, you'll have trouble getting through it without kind of choking up of all the stuff that they've done now for the last 2 years. I didn't get involved in this thing until I went there in the fall of 2015, which is a year and a half ago, and I've had this kind of rule in my life. I only want to get involved where nobody else is involved in or can't get involved in. But because this thing was so well under control, I left it alone. But there was a much bigger problem with what had happened. And in the 6 months that followed, they had numerous aftershocks, which actually did more damage than the quake itself in Kathmandu. Kathmandu was not the center of the quake, but the big buildings, and the buildings in Kathmandu are not built very well. I mean, I saw a series of 6 high-rise apartment blocks that had to be abandoned, and they were just built maybe the last 5 or 7 years. They had to be abandoned because the guys who built it cut the corners and used half-strength concrete, and the whole building was all cracked up. Or all the buildings were all cracked up. You can just imagine how much that cost whoever owned the mortgage on that thing. And that what was happening in the Kathmandu building was that as the aftershocks happened, the mortar in the bricks, which was mud, not concrete, which was 70, 80 years old, just kept on crumbling. They used to keep it together by painting it, okay, but eventually you just couldn't paint an inch inside. There was just, the holes were just too much. And the floor was coming down on the top part. We had to take the floor on the apartment down already earlier. And I could see that this thing was a disaster. This was a way bigger disaster than all the stuff that went on around us in terms of what we were touching, okay? Because this was the hub. This is the campus. This is the home base of the Vineyard Church in all of Himalaya region. So before I tell you the story, I want to put the verse, the Bible lesson on the there it is, Matthew 14. And I want to read it. And as I'm reading it, you can either watch it on the video, or if you have the booklet, I would prefer that you would take the picture and look at the picture. Because this is the story of what happened in this reading. So let me read this to you. It's out of the Message, and it's the story of the disciples on the water. And the boat was far out to sea. That's the Sea of Galilee. When the wind came up against them, and they were battered by the waves. This was 4 o'clock in the morning. They had just finished the big feeding of the 5,000 the day before. And the disciples were kind of hanging around Jesus. And Jesus didn't want them hanging around. So he said, go home. And they didn't go home till 4 o'clock in the morning. So Jesus kind of disappeared. But these guys were, I don't know if they were just discombobulated from everything that had happened. But finally, at 4 o'clock, they decided, we've got to go to the other side. That's where we live. So they got on the boat, and while they were in the boat, this is what happened. So at 4 o'clock, Jesus came towards them walking on the water, on the waves, not just on a sea of glass. And this is not the movie. What was the movie where the guys were walking on the water? Huh? Oh, The Shack. You saw The Shack, you remember that picture of them walking on the water. Well, that was pretty smooth water. The picture shows the waves here, okay? And it's bad enough to be in a boat when you have waves like this, but to be on the water in a little dinghy kind of thing that they had, these were very small boats, it was a lot different story. So Jesus came towards them walking on the water. And they were scared out of their wits. A ghost, they said, crying out in terror. So Jesus comforted them and said, courage, it's me. Don't be afraid. So then Peter, being the emboldened leader that he was, said, Master, if it's really you, call to me to come to the water. This wasn't about Jesus saying, hey, you know what? If you want to really prove that it's me, then jump out of the boat and come. No, Peter said, you tell me to come and I'll come. So Jesus said, come ahead. So jumping out of the boat, Peter walked on the water to Jesus. Okay, he's still looking at the picture. Choppy water. But when he looked down at the waves churning beneath his feet, he started to sink. And he cried, Master, save me. Well, what else would you do? I mean, all of a sudden you're doing the miraculous, and all of a sudden the miraculous is gone, and you got nothing but to yell out for help, right? So Jesus doesn't hesitate. He reached down and grabbed his hand, and then he said, faint heart, what got into you? Then the two of them climbed into the boat, and the wind died down. The disciples in the boat, having watched this whole thing, worshipped Jesus and said, this is it. You are God's son for sure. Now, that event, I would say, took about 2 minutes. Maybe not even. I don't know how far away he was. It looks like Jesus is a little far away, but of course, this is just a drawing or a picture. But I just want you to remember 2 minutes. So I go back to Nepal every year. And when I come back to Winnipeg, I am literally hogtied about what I've seen, because I've seen so much stuff that we're supposed to actually be able to plug into here, and I don't really see it happening at the level of intensity that it's over there. Now, I don't want to spend a lot of time explaining that, other than the fact that raising somebody from the dead, God healing someone who's on their deathbed for 2 years waiting to die. The impact of the Spirit in HRV is just at a level that we've never, ever, ever seen here. And those of you who've been there, you probably understand what I'm saying, if you've talked to the people that have experienced this. So I'd come back and I'd say, so what can we do about this? And being a cause and effect guy that I am, I always try to figure things out why they are the way they are. And what's the difference between over there and over here? Well, the difference that I know of for sure is they don't have anything. They have no social security. They have no insurance policies. They have no money. They only have their faith. They only have what God provides them. And they only walk in that paradigm. And you know what? It's the only thing they have. So it's not like, hey, you know what, we switched gears here from where we were to what we are today. No. They all came out of poverty, still are in poverty. They all came out of the Hindu backdrop because a lot of it was because of the miracles that they saw and the things that Jesus did for each individual person. Virtually everybody there, like the hundreds of people that are there, have experienced some kind of event that is, that basically locks their spirit in to Jesus. So I don't want to spend time telling you the kind of the struggle or the, what do you want to call it, the challenge that I've come back with every year, the same thing, every year, the same thing. All of a sudden, a year and a half ago, 2015, November, when I was there, we were faced with the challenge of what do we do with this big building, these big buildings that we have there. And if you can put the buildings up, put the picture up on the wall of those three buildings. And what are we going to do? And Noel and I are standing in the courtyard, and I'm listening to him, and he's not begging me for money. In fact, I'll tell you how it works. When I go over there, I have about $1,000 in my pocket, cash, Nepali money, or U.S. money. And I use it only for the needs that pop up. And I don't go to people and saying, what do you need? What do you need? No, I don't even talk to them about it. And I never give the people the money. I always give the money to Noel, and he looks after distribution of the money. And it's only if sometimes I see stuff and Noel doesn't even know I see it, and I say, okay, Noel, here's this, here's that, okay? And so Noel expects it, and he doesn't stand there and wait for me to do it. We do it together. This is something we've done for years already. And whether it's at the riverbed or buying the groceries for the blind guy who's always there, he's been there forever, and he's still there. And those of you who are going to go to Nepal and come to Kathmandu, we're going to take you there. We're going to show you. We're not going to display this guy. We're just going to show you. And every week, this church takes a team to the riverbed and gives food away. Now, you might say, well, that's pretty noble of them. Well, I'll tell you what it's really all about. It's really all about touching the heart of Jesus in the poor. And they've built this whole 22 churches with thousands of people on the fact that if you don't minister to the poor, don't even bother thinking about starting a church. The poor are the ones who are the foundational backdrop, are the recipients, and then the church learns from it, just like we do here. And we'll talk a little more about that. So, we're standing in the courtyard, and I'm looking at it and saying, no, I'm saying to Noel, what are we going to do here? He says, well, there's only one thing. We can't sell the bill. We can't sell the property. We paid $350,000 for this property 12 years ago. It's worth about $3 million now. So we can't sell the property because we'd have to go buy it somewhere else, okay? And what are we going to do? We're still going to have to start with something. So we stay where we are. So what are we going to do? We're going to knock everything over, and we're going to build it. Now, how are we going to do that? Well, let me show you the pictures of what we're going to do. These are the two buildings that we're going to build. The one on the right is the boutique hotel, which you'll hear more about shortly. I'm not going to go into the details of that enterprise. That's going to be a profit-driven enterprise for Western visitors. And the building on the right is going to be the church, the one with the cross on it. Okay, show the next picture. And this is, these pictures weren't there when we were talking, okay? But this is what's come out of it since then, okay? This is the building again at floor, ground level, the hotel and then the church, and you've got the last one there. And the one that started right now is this one here. This is the hotel. Now, it didn't take very long for me to figure out this was not a $500,000 deal. This was a multi-million dollar deal. And I'm standing there and I'm saying, well, I don't have $1 million in my pocket right now. So that's the end of that paradigm. You know, giving away the money that you know you have and for the small needs that are there. That was easy. This is a whole different story. I look at Noel and of course, coming from where I come, in all the years that I've ever had anything to do with money, it's always check it out first, count the costs, do the due diligence, and see whether or not you can pull it off. If you can find, if you don't have the money, can you find it, and can you do it for that amount of money? So, of course, I know that's not what I'm supposed to do. That's even biblical. It's in the book here. It's in one of the verses here. Yeah, here, Luke 14, 28, on the bottom of page 3. You desire to build a tower, and if you don't count the cost to see whether or not he's got enough money to complete it, okay? That's, don't start something that you can't finish. Standing there talking to Noel, and I'll tell you what's really going through my mind. What happens if we don't do this? Well, the whole thing goes down the tube. The buildings are, the apartment, the old apartment, I don't have a picture of it here, the old apartment has already been abandoned. The new boys and girls that are living there, they don't want to stay there because the hole in the floor are dripping on their head. It was just a bad, bad scene. And all of a sudden, I don't want to get too spiritual about this, but all of a sudden, I just figured, you know what? It's time to step out of the boat. It's time to walk on water. So I said to Noel, can you build this thing? Can you actually pull this off, build it? I've seen what he's built already in his life. He says, look, I can build this. You find the money, I can do it. I said, Noel, you build it, and I'll find the money. All right, now I'm just trying to be tricky here. I didn't have the money over there or here. But all of a sudden, the Lord just said the alternative wasn't very good, and I didn't want to be... I knew that I was, personally, I was the only connection that he had to maybe the possibility of finding that, okay? So I stepped out of the boat. And I had no idea what I was doing. Just like Peter had no idea what he was doing, except he had Jesus to look at. Well, I had Noel to look at, and he's pretty close to Jesus already, but it's not the bottom line, okay? Okay. That was November 2015, 18 months ago. So normally, if I would have done something like that in my business, I would have gone home and not slept for about a week. Okay? And my bleeding hemorrhoids would have just gone ballistic. So all of a sudden, Noel... Oh, and I said to Noel, by the way, how much is it going to cost? What do you think this is going to cost? He's got a better grip on it. Like, I mean, I had a big education here in 18 months. What's it cost to build something over there? He says, I'll do it for $1 million U.S. That's, at that time, it was a little closer to par. But it was, now it's 1.4, 1.3, whatever, premium for Canadian dollars. So he said $1 million. I said, okay. You do it for $1 million, just so I know what I'm up against here, okay? That means I got to find $1.5 million. And we left it alone. Well, when I got home, I didn't talk too much about it because I was ripping scared. Honestly, I was. But it wasn't like I was losing a lot of sleep about it. In fact, I wasn't losing any sleep about it. I was feeling pretty good about it. And in that next year, because I was going back the following November, I said, look, you get it all together, you get the plans, you get it designed, you find the engineers, you get the architect, get it all together, you get it together, we look at it, and We both didn't like it. But I decided we'll leave it alone until I get back in November. So when I got back in November, I said, look, let's chuck this whole thing, what we have on the table. Let's go find another guy, and let's do it all over again. So without the story, that's what we ended up with. Is there another picture? I think, okay. That's what we ended up with. And I said, hey, I like it. I like the design. I like the color, the insides. We're going to do it a little bit of a Western flavor. And when I got back there, I had decided already before I went, I am going to sit this guy down in a corner somewhere quiet, and I am going to grill him till he's blue in the face about how he handles this kind of stuff, because he lives it all day long, every day, every year. He has no idea how much money he's getting other than the stuff that we do. I mean, the amount of money that we send is significant, but it's not anywhere close to the entire needs. And he only gives out money to support the pastors and to support the different churches when he gets it. It's called daily bread. You only get something with daily bread. We don't do any budgets. We don't know how much we're getting in. Don't ask me for money. I'll give you the money when I have it. So I sat him down in a little Thai bistro, back road of Kathmandu, and we spent about 3 hours. And I said, I want you to tell me everything that you do on a daily basis so that you can sleep at night with the challenge. Like, I mean, his challenge is every bit as big as what we have here now, because he lives with these people, and he's got to face them. And if the money's not there, whatever they think. But they understand. So, here we sit in the bistro, and chomping down green curry and really nice. It wasn't Nepali food; it was Thai food, and which is every bit as good as or better than, in my taste buds, than Nepali food. So he says, "Well, here's what I can tell you. First of all." And then I said I got through it all. I'll go through them point by point. But I ended up calling them principles. Okay, I don't know. That's the only word I could think of that made any sense. Okay, principles for me. Remember, this is my story. Okay, I'm not pushing this one on you. I'm not saying, hey, you got to believe everything here. But there's some good stuff that you could latch onto here. Also, remember, Peter's experience with Jesus walking on the water was 2 minutes. I am 1 year into it already, November 2015 to November 2015. I'm 1 year, 300 plus days into this thing already, and I really need a lift. I'm not hurting, but I just want to make sure I've got it straight. So he starts to give me all the things he knows, and he knows a lot. And I don't want to emphasize the wisdom of this guy, but when you live it every day, you learn a lot. And I think what I'm doing here is I want to give everybody a handle. This whole experience was about me getting handles on the reality of the supernatural that goes on over there that I personally have to live with over here, let alone what's going on in the church here. So. And I don't want to give you the impression that we're way off base. We are not off base here at all, as you will see as we get through this. So the first thing he said to me is Jesus is going to meet us in our need, exactly where we are. We don't have to go running around all over the place, going after him, looking for Jesus, searching, Jesus, where are you, where are you? Where? He says, no, we just have to ask Jesus to supply. So he's going to meet us, our need. Well, I like that idea. I think Peter liked that idea too. You know what? Peter was a fisherman. He was always on the water. He knew the risks of choppy water. And that's where Jesus met him, on the choppy water. What's my environment? Well, my environment is money. I've done it for 50 years. You know? And big time. But the point is, Jesus, meet me in the water, in the money. Meet me where I need you and teach me about this whole thing. So that was principle number one. I'm figuring it out. I'm jumping around here because you got the book. You can read the book, and you can also listen to this on tape on the website eventually. So I'm looking to Jesus to take my hand. Okay, and I'm not trying to be poetic, and I'm not trying to be like creative. I'm just saying, hey, Jesus took Peter's hand. Okay, Jesus, take my hand and help me walk through this, because we haven't even started this thing yet. And it's a year down the road. I've been living it a year. So I figured it out yesterday. 1 year plus another half year to now, plus another half year to fall. That's 2 years, plus 3 years to build it. That's 5 years. That's about 1,800 days, give or take, versus 2 minutes. So I think I need Jesus more than Peter does to walk this thing. And I'm not trying to, I don't want to portray anything that I can walk on water. And I also don't want to portray that I'm an expert at this, because you know what? I wouldn't have spent 3 hours with him in the bar, and not in the bar, we weren't in the bar, we were in the restaurant. I wouldn't have spent 3 hours with him if I would have been an expert. I wrote down so much stuff. It took me a half a day the next day to figure it all out. I just scribbled, and then I'd come back to him and say, what did you mean by this? What do you mean by this? Okay? And some of this, so it's all in the book here. This is what this guy told me. So he meets us where we are. Secondly, he says, get rid of the distractions and the fretting. Just the distractions will bring fretting to you. You'll get anxious. You'll get, what are the distractions? Well, what was the distraction for Peter? For the distraction for Peter was the choppy water. And he looked down at the water, and that was the end of it for him. He was going for the bottom. What's the distractions for me? Well, money in the bank. Maybe not enough for this whole deal, but, you know, we all have money in the bank somewhere. We all have some money somewhere. We all have benefit, well, not all, but we can have benefits, or it depends on the job you have, benefits that you get from your employment. Insurance policies, you name them. Okay, I don't have to name them all. You know what you're leaning on that you don't even need Jesus for. And that might sound a little critical, and it might be a little critical, but you decide for yourself. I'm not trying to poke at you. I'm just trying to tell you what I know. I'll tell you. It was really easy for me if I had $1,000 in a pocket. It was a piece of cake. I just had to go and find out where the needs were, and that was it. And no big, deep kind of understanding, revelation that I had to get for that. But I really needed it now. So, principle number 3 on page 7. Seeing results is helpful. Well, let me tell you what happened in the first year. I started talking it up with a few of my buds. And I didn't ask anybody for any money. They all want to know what I'm doing over there. Some of them even came over to have a look. And they actually liked what they saw. Didn't like the smell, but they liked what they saw. And all of a sudden, somebody drops $100,000 on me for this. I'm saying, oh, wow. It feels like Jesus' hand to me. I mean, I'm still way. And we had a little bit in our foundation that we were gonna use for something else, and we decided we were gonna put it here. So long story short, up to today, we've got about half the money already. Like $700,000 is a lot of money. And when you see the results, wow. Makes a big difference. I mean, you know, I don't wanna preach about this without being able. Like when I'm sitting and listening to the guy who got raised from the dead, and I'm videoing him in the car while he's talking, I'll tell you, that's results. Big time. He's driving the car, not me. Principle number 4. The insurmountable should not deter us. In other words, if it's not insurmountable, if it's not improbable, if it's not impossible, You don't really need Jesus. Okay, and I was going to say, is Luke there? Huh? Oh, he went to youth. Okay. There's an improbable situation. Guy's been in a wheelchair almost since birth. And you saw the videos, those of you who are in the net, in the loop here. He's playing badminton without his wheelchair. Last week? Week before? Whatever. Okay. How much prayer has gone into this whole thing? How much faith? How much beseeching the Lord for his hand? And the guy's playing badminton? On his own 2 feet? Hello? I can't even play badminton. Anyway. Different reason. Oh, he's played 6 games and 1-2. Okay. Excellent. Yes, Lord. Okay. Well, I'll tell you. I said, Noel, this is insurmountable, right? Okay, well, remember, I'm going back now to November 2015 when we're talking. He's telling me this on November 2015. It's got to be insurmountable. If it's not insurmountable, you're probably not going to get the intensity that you're looking for. Okay. Well, this one qualifies for sure. This whole need qualifies. Like, these are not Mickey Mouse buildings. Okay? They're going to be built without any machinery. It's all going to be done by hand. The foundation is going to be, the ground is going to be dug out, not by a bulldozer that goes like this. It's going to be dug out with a shovel and a pick that goes like this into a wheelbarrow over there, onto a truck, away. The only piece of equipment that they're going to have on site is a cement mixer, because they got to get the cement right. Everything else by hand, everything. The concrete, no concrete pumps. Hello? Concrete pumps? They don't have one in Nepal. What do? Basket on the back, strap on the head, take it in, dump it, 1,000 times, 2,000 times. The crew, making $2 an hour, if that, or $1 an hour. And we're paying them, or we will be paying them, better than what they would make anywhere else. That was another one of the rules. Okay, principle number 5. Modeling by others encourages us. Well, like I said, I go over there to watch the modeling. This story is a model of Jesus' intervention. It encourages us. Don't stop praying. Okay? Like, I get an email from Noel. Now, listen to this. You want to talk about the insurmountable? My dear wife, insurmountable. Not as a person, but her kidneys are insurmountable. All right? What does Noel say? We're praying for healing. What does he say in the last email, Violet? Your healing is imminent. It's coming. Okay, well, you know what? Insurmountable. All right? It's got all the tracks. We just have to wait and see for Jesus to manifest himself in the healing. And I'm going to tell you, we're going to wait, and we're going to do what we have to do. Okay, principle number 6. Risking is scary but necessary. You've got to take risks. Like, if you don't step out of the boat, you ain't going to see anything. And I want to tell you, I put this whole boat and Peter thing together way after I made the decision to say yes. Way after. This is all part of, it's all part of the correlation of the revelation and the wisdom and that I got from Jesus on this for myself. My handle doesn't have to be your handle, but it's my handle. I'm sharing my story now. Principle number 7. This is the biggest one for me. Of all these 9 principles, this is the big one. Fixation on Jesus is indispensable. All right, so how do you fixate on Jesus? So, with all the people we got here, we probably get as many answers as there are people. Everybody has their own way of doing it. And there's sometimes you say to yourself, you know what, this really is not working. It's just not happening. And for others, it is happening. But as long as Peter, as long as Peter was looking at Jesus and believing in what he saw, looking at the light, he stayed on the water. As soon as he looked down at the things that were bothering him or could bother him, the waves, he was down. Well, now I'm going to tell you how I do it. And I'm not going to tell you that you can do it that way or you should do it that way. I'm going to tell you you could do it that way, and I'm going to tell you that it does work across the board. So this is a John Rademacher theological dissertation. By the way, this has gone on for the 20 years that I've been here, all right? Because I only really bought into being here in this church, down the street and then on here, for one reason. I only want to see Jesus. Now, that might sound really trite. That might sound like, what are you talking about? Where's Jesus? I'm looking for him. Where is he? Where is he? Okay, what are you talking about? In the spirit? Do I have to lay on my bed and do the meditation? Or do I have to cross my legs and I can't even do that anymore? Meditate, whatever. How do I see Jesus? Well, I'm going to tell you how I see Jesus. And then I'm going to realize, or I realize, that it's exactly the same way as those guys over there in the HRV see Jesus. 95% of the people who go to all those churches, the thousands of people, there's probably 6,000-7,000 people now in all those churches, 95% of them are the lowest caste in the region. The lowest caste. And you say, well, why is that? Well, they're the easiest, I suppose, to attract when you have something for them and they can't get anywhere else. But it's also about Jesus bringing the poorest of the poor to the church and confirming Galatians 2:10. If you're going to start a church, which is what the Jerusalem church elders told Paul when he left, if you're going to start a church, just do only one thing. Remember the poor. Galatians 2:10. If you don't remember the poor, you might as well not start the church. I said that before already. So, for me, any kind of an encounter that I have with anybody who has a need, personally I'm saying no, is something foundational to fixing yourself on Jesus. Well, where do I get that from? Well, I'll tell you where I get it from. You get it from Matthew 25:40. It's in here too. It's the story about, if you do this for the people that are in prison and this and that and what all the things that they need, you show compassion to those in need, you're showing compassion to me. Okay, now I'm going to digress for 1 or 2 minutes here maybe. And I want to tell you about somebody else who lived not long ago, who had the same problem. Mother Teresa lived in Albania. She was a nun, young nun. And I don't know what it was about her, but she had something in her that was trying to find Jesus, and she couldn't find Jesus. She knew all the stuff, okay, but she couldn't find Jesus in a nunnery. She couldn't find Jesus anywhere other than going through the rituals and all that. So what she would do is she'd hop on the Orient Express, spend 4 days, and go to Darjeeling, India, the end of the line, okay, and she'd go looking for Jesus. She couldn't find him there either. Then she went to Calcutta, and she saw all the dying people. There's no dying people in the streets in Darjeeling. Darjeeling is a nirvana place. It's beautiful. Like, it is off. It's like, you just can't imagine. With the mountains and the hills and the tea gardens and the golf courses, which we didn't go on. It is just crazy. And so she goes to Calcutta, and she sees all the dying people. And she says, uh-oh, got to do something about this. So she starts encountering them. And long story short, she ends up staying in Calcutta. And she realizes that the only way that she has found to see Jesus is to do something for the poor. And that's exactly what Matthew 25:40 says. And now Matthew 25:40 is a heavy, heavy verse. Or it's a heavy 10 verses, 5 before, 5 after. If you don't do it, you're going to go in the wrong direction at the end of the day. Read it. Let the Lord speak to you on that. If you do it for those people, you do it for me. And they said, oh, well, how do we see you? Well, you just meet the needs of those who have needs, and you will see me. Now, I'm not sure. I saw Wayne, One Wing Wayne. You know One Wing Wayne? Wayne Laquette. He's just walking down the street. You know where he's going today, right? He's going to the church on Selkirk Avenue. He's not going into the church. He's going to sit on the steps of the church, and he's going to hold out his hat. And he's going to make about $60 or $70 in change. Okay. This is going somewhere. Then he's going to come here. He's going to come to me, if that's in fact where he was going. I saw him on the street. And he's going to plunk down the change on that table over there. And I'm going to give him dollar bills for the change, because he has trouble getting rid of $60 or $70 worth of change. He just wants $20 bills or whatever. And then he's going to say to me, thank you, John. Like he said at least 100 or 200 or 300 times in the last 20 years. Thank you, John. Now, I ain't going to miss that event, because you know what? That's not Wayne Laquette saying. And the reason he gets a lot of money is because he's only got one arm, so he holds it with his hand, and he makes sure everybody can see that he doesn't have an arm. And then he does okay. And I want to tell you, I am going to see Jesus today yet, if he shows up. Well, I'll see Jesus. I have already today seen Jesus. Like, I want you guys to understand, this is a handle for me. And this works. And if you're hospitable to a person who needs what you have to offer, that's the story. That's Jesus saying, thank you for doing that. And that, for me, is seeing Jesus. Now, what do you say? The correlation between me having to see Jesus looking for $1.5 million and seeing Jesus in the poor, how does that correlate? Well, I'm okay with it. It's all okay. I've got it all together already for myself. It's given me a sense of, well, first of all, it's revelation for me. And secondly, it's a sense of stability. And I'm not, and by the way, I'm not into naivety. I'm not into like doing stuff that's really goofy or off the wall. This is reality for me. So when that guy says, thank you, I'm going to know I've seen Jesus. Now, are you going to say, well, how is that going to help you get $1.5 million? I know that Jesus knows that I've seen him. Jesus knows that I've seen him. Now, I'll take this one step further. This is just an addendum. Again, this is John Rademacher theology, which probably will never hit a hermeneutical book, but let me tell you. When I'm in the Matthew 25:40 line, coming towards Jesus and waiting for him to recognize me, I want to make sure I don't have to do a sales pitch on him. I want to make sure that he knows who I am already. And you want to make sure too. And I am sure. I am sure. Because you know what? He's just said thank you so many friggin' times to me. If he doesn't, I mean, he's going to recognize me. And like, maybe that sounds really selfish, but why did you become a Christian in the first place? Not to be selfish. Well, I don't care what you call it. You know what? Don't get me onto that. Now, while I'm talking about becoming a Christian, I just want to say one thing. The business of peace and strength and confidence that you're not going to sink in the water comes with the same feeling for me now, 57 years after I became a Christian. Hello, 57 years. the same feeling of joy and peace that I get now when I see, when I encounter Jesus over here, or that I'm encountering Jesus in this particular adventure of 5 years that I'm on. And I want to tell you one thing. I have not lost 1 minute of sleep over this. And that in itself is a miracle. Because when it comes to money, I know how to worry. Or I used to know how to worry. And it's something to overcome. All right, let's tie this together. So what am I really saying here? Okay. I've always wondered, how come we make the budget every year at this church? Because when we set the budget in January for the whole year, it's always a little more money, and it's always, man, are we going to make it? Is Jesus going to provide? It's always a little more, and every year it's there. And I say to myself, okay, why does this happen for 21 years running? Why has it happened? And why is it going to happen, let's just say, forever while we're here? Well, I'll tell you what it is. We as a community, one of our highest values, if not our highest value, it probably should be, but if it isn't, it doesn't matter. As long as it's one of our values, is that we are going to look after the poor. And I believe that the Trinity, God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit, have a big-time vested interest in what's going on here. And this is not, they're not going to leave us out on the end of the fish line like a dry piece of bait. We're going to catch fish, and we're going to make the budget, and we're going to get $1.5 million. Yeah? Hello? Okay. So, it'll happen. I'm not trying to be trite about it. I just know the Lord has said, I'm going to get the money. Just like Noel says, it's going to be $1 million. And as an aside, guess what? I've done 2 times already the budget on this thing my own way. And guess what the number was the last time I came up with? $1,001,000. Okay. Well, that's pretty close to $1 million. And I did it again, and I found a $1,000 mistake. And I came up with $1 million. So I emailed Noel, and I said, Noel, I did it again. The last time I'm going to do it now till you actually spend the money, it's $1 million. And he writes me back and he says, John, what are you so surprised about? I told you it's going to be $1 million. So I says, well, yeah, so what are you saying? I says, the Lord told me it's going to be $1 million. And when the Lord tells me it's going to be something, that's what it's going to be. And that's from a guy who's got way more confidence in hearing from the Lord than I do sometimes, okay? So I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling even better about it now that he said that. Okay. So, what I'm driving at here is, I want to tie this all together. Number one, we got to step out of the boat. In every improbable, insurmountable, impossible situation, whatever it is, if it's a physical thing, if it's a spiritual thing, if it's a financial thing, whatever it is, let's stick together and let's work through it. And that's the blessing of the community. So you're not out there in the boat all by yourself. Number two, the way we survive this thing is we fix our eyes on Jesus. All I'm going to say to you, I'm going to challenge you, figure out a way to do that. I'm telling you how it works for me, and I want to tell you, man, I'm just too old to be on the wrong track. This is the right track for me personally. And I hope whatever I've told you is an encouragement to you to go from here and to bone up on your theology about fixing your eyes on Jesus. I say here, read Ann Ortland's book called Fix Your Eyes on Jesus. What is that called? Haven of Rest. The wife of the guy who did Haven of Rest. She wrote this little book. I don't know if you guys find it. It's actually worth a quick read. Well, it's not a quick read. Every single topic that you can have a problem with in terms of in your life, she covers. And she says, she shows how she does it and how it can be done. So, thirdly, look for the poor. We don't have, well, we have some structured events like the drop-in and And those of you who come to the drop-in and sit and encounter people who you don't even really know, and you get to know who they are, and you understand them a little bit, and maybe you even do something for them. Look, all you need is one poor person in your life. Find that person quietly and look after them. You make the boundaries. Your boundaries, whatever boundaries you're comfortable with, and there might be quite a bit of discomfort in all this for you, but make your own boundaries, but do it. And whatever it is, if it's a McDonald's voucher, if it's a bag of groceries, if it's clothes, if it's this, if it's that, if it's just listening to them, whatever, do it. And then when you're finished, see if that wasn't Jesus. Just see if you could say, you know what, this wasn't Jesus. What's Rademacher talking about? He's so full of hot air. That's a bunch of baloney. No, it's not baloney at all. It works. 21 years going, it works. I can tell you. And I'm a salesman. And I'm not trying to sell you. The only way you're going to find out is you got to do it yourself. So what I'd like to do now, we're going to do communion. I want to play a song. Are you guys ready up there? The song? It's called If You Say Go. I'm going to put the words. Can you put the words up on the thing before you play it? I want to read the words. No, that's not the words. Okay. This is a Vineyard song. I have listened to this song for probably a dozen years. Never knew why. All of a sudden it makes sense to me. Like, hello? This is the only Vineyard song when I'm sitting on the beach with the iPod in my ears, the only one I listen to. Honestly, out of all the songs that I've got on my iPod, this is the only one this is what I start with. If you say go, we will go. If you say wait, we will wait. If you step out on the water and they say it can't be done, we will fix our eyes on you, and we will go. Put the words, instead of we, put the word I, and see if you can figure it out. Okay, just play it. It'll only take a minute and a half or so. Go ahead. Turn it right up, okay? So we're going to do communion, and Suhail's going to lead us on that, but I just want to say that after we do communion, if you want to have some prayer for anything that even connects with something that we've said today, instead of going back to your seat, come on up here, and the prayer team and us will pray for you, okay? You tell us what it is, okay? We'll initiate something. We'll launch something. We'll give you a little more courage and confidence that we're behind you on this. So at the end of the booklet, I've written, name your insurmountable challenge. And only if it's going to take something supernatural to heal. Okay, let's get really picky about this. Let's go for the deep end here, okay? 10-meter board. Ask Jesus from a contrite heart to deal with it and have faith to receive it. Okay. Ask for forgiveness for any hindrances that might withhold healing. And I haven't gone into the hindrances here, okay? I didn't want to get... that's another whole story. And then throw yourself at the feet of Jesus, reach out for the hem of his garment, and expect a miracle. That's another story in Scripture. The woman who couldn't get Jesus' attention said, I'll get his attention. I'll just go yank on his coat a little bit, and he'll know. And he did know. And she did get healed. So, Lord, I just ask for every single need that's in this room, whatever it is, your own private situation, your silent wrestle with the Lord, your disappointments, your longing to have something that will make a difference, I just ask for you to appear on the water to those situations. And we will fix our eyes on you. And we will figure out a way to fix our eyes on you. And we know that you will take our hand. So we invite you to come and do that. Amen.